Hi, everybody. It's Diane. So happy to be back with you with the new podcast we're calling Diane Rehm On My Mind. We'll post it each Friday at noon with lots of different subjects, guests, and discussions. Sometimes you'll hear a top of the news story. It might be a really interesting book author or even a musician. All the conversations, issues, and people that really grab me. And of course, we'd like to hear from you. We want to know what you'd like to hear and say about our subjects. So as always, the ways to reach us, drshow@wamu.org, Facebook, and Twitter. I don't think I need to have to tell you, the country's been rocked by allegations made public that Russia may have compromising material on President-elect Donald Trump. So on the line with us, David Ignatius of The Washington Post. David, Happy New Year to you.
To you too, Diane. Great to be on your new show.
This has been an absolutely stunning week in Washington. The president-elect held a news conference. He accused the U.S. intelligence community of leaking these allegations I referred to. We seem to be in a whole mess of misinformation, disinformation. We don't know how to figure out what's true and what's not true. Was it, in your mind, appropriate for BuzzFeed to release the information from a secret source in the UK?
I think BuzzFeed made a mistake in publicizing this. I am one of many dozens of journalists who have been aware of this information and who have been trying to establish whether it was accurate, whether the charges in it were true. We've been working on this for weeks, in some cases for months. I think responsible journalists found that they simply couldn't establish that key details here were true. As I see journalism, it's our job to do that vetting, to make sure that the things we put before the public are accurate to the best of our knowledge. I don't think we're in the business of just throwing any piece of information out. And I think BuzzFeed, with what was really a premature disclosure of unsubstantiated fact, gave Trump team the opportunity to basically say, this shows that we were right. This is a political witch hunt. This is a campaign of leaks. So I think it's very unfortunate. I think the issues that are covered in that dossier are ones that need to be examined carefully, ideally by the FBI, which has resources that we in the news business just don't have. It's my understanding that they've been looking at this for several months, that their investigation remains open. I think that's good, that they should get to the bottom of the investigation and then be able to tell us, is this true or false?
So you, as a reporter, have also been looking at it, examining it. Are there parts of it that ring true to you?
Well, the basic contention of our government in the unclassified version of the intelligence agency's report is that Russia was waging covert action using hacking and other techniques to try to hurt Hillary Clinton and help Donald Trump in the 2016 election. That's part of the thrust of this dossier that was compiled by a former British intelligence officer. The dossier goes into so much detail, asserting meetings and dates and events that, as I say, we haven't been able to establish. But it does, the general thrust of it is that, yes, Russia was seeking to help Trump, they assert, working with Trump. We haven't been able to establish that ourselves. but the sort of baseline is the same, that Russia wanted to intervene in the election to destabilize U.S. politics and in the end to help Trump.
And that part of it, you believe, may be true?
I don't want to speak to the dossier because I can't establish the truth of that. I am convinced that the judgment that our intelligence agencies reached after their investigation, that this was a Russian action approved from the top, meaning approved by President Putin, that aimed to hurt Clinton and help Trump, I'm confident that that's accurate based on what I know. I don't want to speak to this separate document, which has got just so many things. I can't speak to its reliability as a document.
How stunned were you by Donald Trump's denouncement of CNN at the news conference?
I thought CNN comments by Trump, his indignation toward them, was misplaced. I think BuzzFeed, as I said, made a mistake in publishing this raw document. What CNN reported was that Trump had been briefed on this summary of allegations of personal and other leverage that the Russian intelligence service, it was said, had on him. And I think that's a factual statement. James Clapper, the director of national intelligence, decided that he had a responsibility to brief Trump on the existence of this dossier and the allegations. I think the reason that he did that was he felt that since the FBI had it and had been investigating it, since it was out, since it might explode at any minute, he had a responsibility as the top U.S. intelligence officer to share that with the president-elect. It infuriated Trump that he did that, but I think that was probably a sensible call. That should have been a confidential conversation. Conversations with your intelligence officials need to be private. But the fact that it had happened did leak to CNN. But it was I think that was defensible, and Trump was wrong to denounce them for reporting it.
One last question, and that is regarding the relationship between Donald Trump and the intelligence community. What do you think yesterday's denouncement again and again of that community is going to mean for U.S. intelligence agencies going forward?
Well, I think when you have the president-elect of the United States likening our intelligence officers to Nazis, that's just a dreadful situation. I think it's offensive to the people who work at the CIA and other agencies. I think it poisons the president's relations with the people with whom he needs a real relationship of trust and confidence. The CIA uniquely works for the president, has authorities to act on the president's behalf that are unique in our government under the National Security Act of 1947. That's got to be straightened out. Trump will have a new CIA director, Mike Pompeo, who he trusts. Pompeo gets good reviews from people at the CIA who think he's smart. He was number one in his class at West Point. He went to Harvard Law School and distinguished himself there. So he's a serious person. The agency needs political support to be able to function, and it needs somebody who will stand up to a president who clearly regards our intelligence agencies as an enemy. If you'd liken them to Nazis, it just suggests a poisonous beginning to the relationship.
David Ignatius of The Washington Post, thank you.
Thanks, Diane.
So, earlier this week, just hours before those allegations hit the news, we were listening to this from Capitol Hill.
You know who I am. You know what I believe in. You know that I'm a man of my word and can be trusted to do what I say I will do. You know that I revere the Constitution, that I'm committed to the rule of law, and you know that I believe in fairness and impartiality and equal justice under law.
That was Jeff Sessions before the Senate Judiciary Committee, here to explain concerns some people have about his fitness to be Attorney General. Carrie Severino of the Judicial Crisis Network by phone. Sherrilyn Ifill, president of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post. So, Carrie, let me start with you. What did we learn about Jeff Sessions from the confirmation hearings this week? Long hours up there.
Yeah, the first day, Senator Sessions was there for almost 11 hours speaking. I think what we got to see was a picture of what Sessions' colleagues already probably know. Many people there had served almost two decades with him on the Senate. And what we saw was a picture of someone who is very committed to the rule of law. I think a few things that maybe were surprising to his questioners who seemed like they were on the other side were his commitment to enforcing laws that he even disagreed with. So there was a question. He has talked about what a horrible decision he thinks Roe versus Wade is. As a legal matter, he thinks it's incorrect. But he said, I'm very committed to this is the law. This is what the Supreme Court has said, and I'm going to follow that. He said the same thing about several laws that he said he may personally have voted against, he may disagree with. But he views the law, the role of the Attorney General, as one of carrying out the law. And I think that should be something that's very encouraging. It actually fits exactly with what Senator Feinstein opened with the remarks, talking about the role of the Attorney General being one that will enforce the law across the board and who will keep the president in check with the Constitution as well. I think Sessions actually answered all those questions in exactly the way that I hope would have satisfied Feinstein.
Sherrilyn Ifill, his colleague in the Senate, Senator Cory Booker, took the unprecedented step of testifying against him.
Senator Sessions has not demonstrated a commitment to a central requisite of the job, to aggressively pursue the congressional mandate of civil rights, equal rights, and justice for all of our citizens. In fact, at numerous times in his career, he has demonstrated a hostility towards these convictions and has worked to frustrate attempts to advance these ideals.
Sherrilyn Ifill, Congressman John Lewis also spoke against Jeff Sessions. What was your reaction?
You know, it's interesting. It was riveting testimony to hear Senator Booker, to hear Representative John Lewis and the new chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Cedric Richmond, testify. And I think it was Senator Cornyn who said earlier in the day that, you know, if you contrasted the testimony of Senator Sessions with those testifying the second day, it was like two different people. And so it's interesting to me the idea that someone who's seeking to be Attorney General of the United States, reassuring the committee that they would follow the law, is somehow seen as a high watermark. That is the absolute minimum that would be required, frankly, of any law enforcement officer, not to mention the Attorney General of the United States. The question on the table really was whether, given Senator Sessions' record dating back to 1985, when he prosecuted black voters for unsuccessfully prosecuted black voters, civil rights activists, for voter fraud in Alabama under some very questionable conditions that were sufficient to raise concerns with the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1986, which kept him from a federal judgeship, whether that set of circumstances and his record in the subsequent 30 years demonstrates that he is prepared to be the chief enforcer of the nation's civil rights laws. One of the most important civil rights laws enacted was the Civil Rights Act of 1957, which gave the Attorney General, through the Civil Rights Division, that position to enforce the nation's civil rights laws. And I have to tell you that although Senator Sessions said he would follow the law, I was there for I think I left at 5 minutes before he finished testifying, so I was there for 10 hours, and I failed to hear an actual even understanding of the civil rights portfolio that's before him. He knew nothing about victims of sex trafficking who seek abortions. He knew nothing about Native American women suffering sexual violence on reservations from non-tribal members who are not prosecuted. He purported not to have even read the Fourth Circuit case, finding that North Carolina's voter ID law with surgical precision attempted to discriminate against black voters. These are all the core areas of his portfolio, and particularly his civil rights portfolio, as Attorney General. At one point, Senator Blumenthal asked him about Dreamers who have given their information to the government and whether he would stand morally to see to it that they were not deported, and he purported to know very little about that. So it was the unadorned statement. He did say that he would follow the law. But as I said, that strikes me as the very minimum. And for an attorney general candidate, I think it was Representative John Lewis who said we need someone who will speak up and speak out. You are certainly are expected to lead. This is the lead, the chief law enforcement officer of the United States. And I didn't hear that leadership as I listened in the hearing.
Carrie, I wonder what your reaction is. Does Jeff Sessions not know enough?
I have to say that I think the reason following the law is something that is a novel concept is because, unfortunately, what we have seen under the Obama administration, and particularly under the attorney generalship of Eric Holder, is actually a decided pattern of politicizing the office rather than simply enforcing the laws as they are. So, and I several of these came up during the confirmation hearings, but instances like the drug laws that this administration has selectively decided not to enforce in several states, the immigration laws, which the president was unable to pass the DREAM Act and therefore attempted to effectively do it through other means, as well as DAPA, those are simply not enforcing the law. In addition, Eric Holder's decision, for example, to challenge the Defense of Marriage Act in court rather than actually defending the laws, those are the kind of things that I think strike a decided contrast with Sessions' thing. I want to just quick correct also the record. Sherrilyn said that black voters were the ones bringing the case. Ironically, that's exactly what the NAACP was taken to task by Senator Cruz and by Peter Kersenaw of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission that was on the panel for leaving out of his testimony. The case, the Perry County case, was one in which black candidates complained of voter fraud. It was entirely black voters who were at issue. They had absentee ballots that had names crossed out, other names put in. The FBI had found 75 such ballots with people extended testimony saying, no, I did not intend to change these things. What Peter Kersenaw said is it would have been a dereliction of duty for Senator Sessions when he was attorney general not to have brought that case. The fact that the people on the other side happened to be civil rights activists, I don't think he did it because they were civil rights activists. It was clearly because there was a case in plainly in front of them of vote, and it was the black candidates who asked him to bring the case. So leaving that out, I think, really colors the way that case looks. This was an open and shut case.
Ed O'Keefe, if you would, explain to us how much power, the breadth and depth of the power of the attorney general.
Well, first off, congratulations, Diane, that you're continuing these conversations via podcast. I didn't realize today was the debut, but great to be a part of it.
Good.
And glad you'll keep doing this.
Good.
What the Attorney General does is, as Ms. Eiffel pointed out, the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States. And senators of both parties at all times have always sort of seen this as a critical position, probably right next to Secretary of State in importance in a presidential administration, because this person, whoever it is, has to act or be willing to act with a fair amount of independence if needed, should a president or his administration start to deviate, if you will, from the law or from the Constitution. Sessions, like nominees before him, said, of course, that he would. That, of course, as with all previous cases, remains to be seen. But that is what sparks such great concern from groups opposed to his nomination, and why we've seen such incredible coordination and preparation for this nomination fight by conservative groups. I have never seen a confirmation process for any cabinet nominee include things like television and online ads and websites quite the way we've seen it for Jeff Sessions. And that's partly because for conservative organizations across the country who have clamored for someone like him, he is their dream come true, and they are doing everything they can to ensure that his confirmation is swift and easy. And I believe, frankly, it is a preview of what we will see once Donald Trump nominates his first pick to serve on the Supreme Court.
All right. Let me go back to you, Sherrilyn. Is the issue of independence the primary issue in your mind?
Well, it is one issue, but I have to, for the sake and the honor of those who were acquitted in this so-called open and shut case that your guest just referred to, the Turners, Evelyn and Albert Turner and Spencer Hoag, who were selectively prosecuted by Senator Sessions. I'll say this. If we really want to begin to talk about what was left out of the testimony, I commend you to the letter submitted by former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, who was one of the lawyers on the team at the NAACP Legal Defense Fund who represented the Marion Three, as they've been called, or the book chapter written in 1995 by Lonnie Guinier, who was also on that team. I would also note that not only were they acquitted, but this case was reviewed by the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1986 and was part of the reason they rejected him. And I would also commend to you to read the letter and very long statement by Coretta Scott King that was recently discovered and was submitted to the committee in 1986, where she talks precisely about what happened in Perry County, the selective prosecution, the way in which white jurisdictions where these same claims were raised did not result in prosecutions of voters, but did in black jurisdictions, and the manner of the prosecution, bringing elderly black people 180 miles to Mobile, Alabama, instead of to Selma, intimidating them, sending the FBI to their homes so that voters in that county for some time to come decided that they would not vote anymore because they were afraid to, because they were brought in as witnesses and were intimidated by the FBI under the authority of Jeff Sessions when he was United States Attorney.
Sure,
if you want the full record, get the record. But I have to say that. On the independence piece, Diane, let me say this. Because the senator was asked about this. He has been a big supporter of President-elect Trump, which is not, you know, in and of itself disqualifying. However, during the portion of the campaign when President-elect Trump was making comments such as that a judge of Mexican descent could not be impartial in his case, when he talked about the tape was released in which he bragged about sexually assaulting women, when he talked about a Muslim registry, when he talked about Mexicans being rapists, when he denigrated the African-American community, saying, what do you have to lose? These were moments in which Senator Sessions, as a lawyer, someone who's been a former U.S. attorney and was a United States senator and is a United States senator, could have said, although I support the candidate, I do not stand with him in this. I do not believe that a judge, simply because he's of Mexican descent, can't be impartial. I do not believe that a Muslim registry is constitutional. He didn't. He didn't say any of those things. He didn't distance himself from the then candidate when he made those kinds of statements. And so I think these are the things that we have to look at when we're trying to determine whether or not this attorney general can be independent of the president. And I think all of that's on the table. And unfortunately, the record does not look good on that point for Senator Sessions.
What's your response to the non-reaction of Jeff Sessions when President-elect Trump made those comments?
He was very clear about those issues when they were brought up in his confirmation.
How?
He was asked specifically, could you have a Muslim registry? Could you forbid all Muslims from entering the country? It was very straightforward, and he said no. I think that stands for a lot because everyone knows what they're talking about is the president who is going to be nominating him, and so he could have tried to weasel word his way out of that. He was very clear. He was asked point blank about some of the hot mic comments that the president had made and said very clearly, if this happened, that would be sexual assault.
Well, so he said if this happened, when in fact we had CNN tape showing he did say those words, and Mr. Sessions.
No,
did not.
He was. He wasn't saying if he said those words. He obviously knows what the words that were said. Senator Leahy was simply saying, "Would this type of behavior constitute sexual assault?" And he said yes. Yes, period. So all of those things, I think, were opportunities where you could have had someone try to, nuance something. He was very straightforward. I think that was commendable. He also said if there were a time when the president asked him to do something that he thought was unconstitutional, first, of course, as the attorney general, he would take the president and try to explain, here's what you are limited to by the Constitution. But he said and pledged that if the president insisted on doing action that was unconstitutional, he would resign. Now, I resent the suggestion that it remains to be seen what will happen, because we have a record on Senator Sessions. We've seen him. He spent decades in public service. He was the Attorney General of Alabama. He was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Alabama. He has lots of experience. And the people who testified in that committee who knew him and who knew him well, unlike those who came in from activist groups from the outside, but those who had worked with him on the final panel in particular, there were three different black men who had worked with him in different phases of his career. They said without an exception, talked in incredible detail. One almost choked up speaking about how wonderful the Senator Sessions had been to him. They talked about his commitment to civil rights. William Smith, I think, was really compelling at the end. And he said, look, I know a racist when I see one. I have seen one before. And Senator Sessions is not it. The reason they're seeing you have no direct evidence of it is because the man doesn't have a racist bone in his body.
O'Keefe, what about that record?
About the senator's record.
Yes.
Well, look, as you've heard here, it's very much in dispute, and it depends on who you're talking to. Look, his reputation here in the Senate is such that, by all accounts, he's going to be confirmed attorney general. The question is how many, if any, Democrats will vote for him. Most of those who have spoken out so far have said they will not because they hew to the way that Ms. Eifel and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund believe that he is just not the person at this time, nor should he ever be, to be Attorney General. However, remember, the Republicans control the Senate. All you need now are 51 votes, and there are 52 Republicans. None of them have said that they have any issues with him. I was struck this week by Tim Scott, the Republican senator from South Carolina, who had made very clear from the beginning, when Sessions was first named, that he was going to have to take a look at this, because he knows that he comes from and he represents a lot of people who, as he put it to me, come into contact probably more than any other government official with people who eventually report up to the Attorney General or would be under the purview of the Attorney General. So he brought Senator Sessions to Charleston to meet with African-American pastors, to meet with the local police chief and some other folks. They walked away from that meeting impressed and believing that this was someone who probably could do the job. Scott said he also went and talked to folks in Alabama who had worked with the senator, who had known the senator, and who knew the controversy back in 1986.
Sure.
He walked away from that believing that it was okay to vote for Sessions, and he says he will. And he has faced plenty of blowback in the days since from African-Americans and others saying, why would you do this? And he said, look, I did my homework. I went and talked to these people. And to those who are opposed to him, I would ask them to do the same. And yesterday, the testimony that happened this week from Senator Booker and John Lewis was notable, was dramatic and unprecedented. But there's nothing it's going to do necessarily to stop Sessions from being confirmed as early as next week, possibly.
Sherrilyn, do you agree? Nothing to stop him.
What I disagree with is that the only question is how many votes will he get and whether he'll be voted in. I think, Diane, as was one of your guests just suggested, there's a 40-year record of Senator Sessions. And I think what we are confronting is whether, in fact, your record matters. Does it matter what you failed to do last summer when you could have distanced yourself from these odious remarks from the then candidate? The fact that you sit at a table when you're seeking to get a job from your colleagues and now say, oh, yes, it was sexual assault, but didn't recognize it then, that you're now willing to say that, no, I don't believe that Muslims should be barred from the country simply because of their religion, but you weren't willing to say it then. Actually, I think that speaks volumes in quite the opposite way. Who could be confirmed as attorney general sitting at the table if they now said that in their testimony? Of course you couldn't be confirmed for the job. So what are we to do with one's record? I think a powerful part of the hearing was when David Cole, the legal director at the ACLU, told the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee that if an intern sought an internship in your office with this kind of record, you would have a very serious pause before you were willing to give them the job. This person wants the keys to one of the most important pillars of our democracy, the rule of law. He represents us. He represents our legal system, not only within the country, to the rest of the world. And if this is not a record that is too troubling to make that person the chief enforcer of the nation's civil rights laws and the nation's chief lawyer, then perhaps there is no record that would bar someone from that position. And I think that's part of what we're confronting. We felt the need to tell the truth about that record and to put it out there in detail and with contemporaneous facts. We understand what people will say today. We understand what he will say. we understand that some people think it's perfectly fine to dismiss the very detailed statement of Coretta Scott King as nothing more than being an activist. That is not something I am ever prepared to do. And I would hope that the members of the Judiciary Committee would afford it the respect as well. I understand politics and I understand voting, but I also understand truth and I understand the clients that I represent. We want an attorney general who actually thinks it's important enough to know that the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals have struck down voter ID laws, who recognizes the plight of Native American women, who recognizes the plight of immigrants and dreamers. We think that's the qualification for the job, not simply that you are friends with members of the Senate, that you are seen as a nice and polite person, and that you tell us today that you're willing to follow the law you seek to obtain this important job.
Okay. And finally, Ed, what are we learning more generally from the other confirmation hearings, particularly that Rex Tillerson almost overshadowed here?
Well, I think what we're learning in Tillerson's case is that there is some Republican concern about him and his qualifications. There is concern about some exchanges he had during his confirmation hearing on Wednesday regarding Russia. He declined under questioning by Senator Marco Rubio to say emphatically whether Vladimir Putin is a war criminal based on what the Russian military has been doing in Syria. Dodging that brings pause to enough Republicans to cause those of us who track these things to think, well, we're going to just have to keep a closer eye on this one. Because, again, you need 51 senators, and if Rubio and a few others said no, then that would be enough to defeat him, conceivably.
And what about all the crazy allegations regarding Moscow and Donald Trump? How are they working themselves into at least the mood of these hearings?
It's come up in every one of the national security hearings, whether it was Sessions' hearing, Tillerson's hearing, the hearing on Thursday for Mike Pompeo, the Kansas congressman, to be CIA director. All of them have been asked about it, and all of them say, well, yes, based on what we've seen in news reports and in the unclassified versions of the reports, it looks as if they have meddled. They are in agreement with Donald Trump on that point now. And, you know, Democrats have tried to put some distance between these nominees and Donald Trump regarding Russia. Most notably, it probably happened with James Mattis, the defense secretary nominee, who made clear that he sees Russia as the U.S.'s greatest threat. That was a little farther than Tillerson perhaps was willing to go, who suggested it was radical Islam. So we're starting to see the potential signs of cleavage, as there are in any administration, and how it would shape up in a Trump administration. But again, of all of these nominees who have had hearings this week, despite the loud protests of groups that don't like them, despite the concerns of some Democrats, there are, at least so far, no signs that any of them are destined to be defeated or to withdraw. And the hope among Republicans is that they can confirm at least a handful of the top picks shortly after Donald Trump becomes president on Inauguration Day.
All right, and Carrie, last question to you. How many votes do you believe Jeff Sessions will get in the end?
Well, I think obviously he's got the 52 Republican votes, but we've already had Senator Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, who's come out in support of Sessions. I think you'll see the Democratic support increase first, because I think he's a known quantity to them. I think the people who've worked with him, frankly, it was shocking that Cory Booker, who's someone who just recently said he was honored to work with Senator Sessions to sponsor the Congressional Medal for people like Rosa Parks and the Selma marchers, has turned about so quickly for his own political gain, I think. But I think the rest of the senators really do know who he is at heart. They've given him a thorough hearing, and I think you'll see a lot of Democrats line up behind him.
Carrie Severino, Sherrilyn Ipel, and Ed O'Keefe, thank you. On my mind for next week, a look at the Women's March on Washington. Are you going? Why? We'd like to hear from you at Twitter and Facebook, or email us a voice memo at drshow.org. The theme music for today's show was composed by Cliff Harden. I'm Diane Rain. Talk to you next week.